David here. Well, it won't be David for long. Soon enough, it'll be Keith Baverstock himself. The Australian adventurer, explorer, entrepreneur, and genius, really, who started London Walks. Indeed, who started urban walking tours back in the 1960s. It'll be Keith's words and my voice. I'm going to read what he has sent to us. Now, I joined London Walks as a guide 40 years ago, in 1980. So I have waited for this moment effectively for 40 years. I was very interested in the history of the company. I mean, I thought walking tours were just wonderful. So how did they get started? Who came up with the idea? What was that early history? Now, in 1980, when I joined as a guide, Keith had for some years already been back in Australia. But there was one guide, Graham, who had been hired by Keith. And so I used to pick Graham's brains. He would tell me what he could recall about Keith and those early days. And he had this lapidary phrase. I loved it. He said, Keith was fed up with the banality of typical London tourist fare. And so he started walking tours. He started London Walks. Well, that was about all I could get out of Graham. But 20 years later, I managed, thanks to the internet, to track Keith down. I did some searching, Googling, although it wasn't called Google then. And I found a newspaper article on the web that said that he had presented he'd done a Colonial Day school experience for Australian kids. And then I went to the telephone directory. I looked up the name. I think at the time there were 20 Keith Baverstocks, and I started ringing. And sure enough, I got it. I think it was the second one. Keith wasn't in, but his wife Fiona was there, and I had a good chat with her. Well, that was fun. That was interesting, but nothing more came of it. And now here we are, 20 years later, 2020. We've been in touch with Keith again. I think it was really Facebook that did the trick this time. And we've had a good correspondence back and forth. And Keith has agreed to tell the story, to write it out in chapters, if you will. And the first two came in a couple of days ago, and absolutely thrilled to have them. So these podcasts are going to carry the story. Now, probably we should be get an Australian to read these. And I don't have an Australian on tap here under my roof. I could, of course, also maybe get one of our actors to do an Australian accent. But you know something? I can't wait. I've been like a kid on Christmas Eve with this. So I'm going to do it. So you're going to get this American accent telling this wonderful story, a story written by the man who created the whole thing, an Australian. He sent us two chapters this week. The first one is pretty much background. You're going to get that tonight. It's biographical. It's Keith talking about his early days in London. And then the next episode will move directly into the business of the very first London Walk and the very beginning of the company. So, yeah, that's it. Here's Keith. Here's what he's written. Swinging London, 1968. 52 years ago. The year that a 23-year-old colonial, growing up mainly in New Zealand, Australia, and Papua New Guinea, came to London. A 23-year-old colonial whose knowledge of London and British history was limited to what could be gleaned from school textbooks monthly Parade History magazine, and Classic Comics. So why the love of history, of London, and the desire, compulsion even, to share its historic nooks and crannies with groups of locals and tourists? Possibly not from Mr. House, the history master at Essendon High School in Melbourne, whose teaching technique comprised striding up and down the aisle between the desks, dictating from a book, and flicking the sleeves of his chalk-smeared gown round our ears as he went. Hardly inspirational. And when I had to leave school at 15 when my father died, a series of uninspiring, boring jobs. Insurance clerk, shop assistant, engineering trainee for which I had no aptitude, mail boy, builder's estimator, and worst of all, abattoir worker, spurred me on to acquire some kind of qualification at night classes. Being Australia, you had to pay, and when the money ran out, I avidly devoured textbooks in my bedroom after work. My talents did not lie with science and maths, so I opted for history subjects. British history, modern history, Greek and Roman history, American history, and compulsory English, and remarkably, passed. Adventure and big money drew me to what was then the final frontier of Papua New Guinea, an Australian territory, and the site of bitter fighting against the Japanese during World War II. A job as a plantation manager at age 20, and lick-lick doctor, basic paramedic, fixer of machete slashes, snake bites, and ulcerated sores. Little did I foresee that 13 years on, I would pioneer the opening of battlefield tours in Papua New Guinea, reopening the fabled Kokoda Trail. With a few hundred pounds in my pocket, I returned to Australia, having made the decision to do what was a rite of passage for most Australians and New Zealanders in the 1960s, a two-year working holiday in England and Europe. London was the initial draw. Stepping off the boat, I headed off to Kangaroo Valley. Every Aussie in the 1960s knew to head to Earl's Court, bedsitter land, home of the overseas visitors, cheap eateries, and droves of Aussie, Kiwi, and South African transients. Surely in London, I would seek a position perhaps with an art gallery, auction house, antique dealer, or some trade that would satisfy my love of history. But no, within 48 hours of arriving, I had secured a position with BOAC. Now British Airways. The 2 years I was to spend there would be the formative years that would see the basis of London Walks. The walks from Earl's Court and later Notting Hill Gate, where I lived, to Victoria, where BOAC took me, where BOAC was, took me past so many blue plaque buildings, historic palaces like Kensington and Buckingham, shops that had histories going back hundreds of years, military barracks where famous regiments were billeted, and red-coated pensioners sitting in the sun, museums like the V&A, parks where prime ministers and the famous had ridden and walked, and of course the River Thames, with all of its hundreds of years of history. Most days, outside of the BOAC terminal, in the 1960s, BOAC had a terminal which transported hundreds, if not thousands, of people daily to Heathrow, as well as bringing arriving passengers to Victoria. One would hear the sound of one of the guard's military bands marching past with the palace guard in step and a flag with dozens of battle honors on it. I looked up, looked down, looked around, and was hooked. But the walks were definitely far from my mind in 1965, as I had met my future wife within a week or so of arriving in London, had married in 1966, and there was a baby on its way in 1967. As fate would have it, within a year or so, all those walks to and from BOAC and visits to historic London pubs would see me taking people in my footsteps for 5 shillings, 25 pence a time. But that is the next part of my story. Thanks, Keith. We'll hear from you tomorrow night again. Thanks very much.